Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we're going to
present our recorded show
from last night. And our interview with Tom Payne. And Tom was...
Not the Tom Payne, but a different Tom Payne.
Yeah, right. And we're going to talk about... we talk about his new book, The Template of Time, right? And we're also going to play the majority of the program. We're going to repeat last night's program. We had some great...
Lila, our special guests, and me, Elise.
And you can hear our from the WQQQ show last night. She's in at WQQQ.com.
The opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of Q103 Radio, its management, ownership, staff, or its sponsors.
So we're gonna let you go to that, and I'm just gonna pause that for a minute, and we're gonna let you listen to what we did last night.
Mm-hmm.
We had some great
interesting interview I saw.
Yeah, it was a good
Tom
interview.
Tom was very good.
Yeah, yeah.
You weren't sure how you felt about it, but I liked it.
Well, it was interesting that George called. I didn't get a chance to call him back, but George had called tonight and today and said he listened to the show last night and he liked it and he was hoping we'd repeat the interview tonight.
Oh, good.
So you'll get a chance to hear that. But I think it was an interesting show. It was an interesting interview in that
it was different from our usual Tuesday night interviews. Because mostly we focus more on politics and historical events. This book was interesting because it he defined a mathematical numbers kind of pattern to events in history. But you should listen to Tom Payne, and he'll tell you about it much better than I can.
Yeah, he's dealing with a biblical...
and he can make predictions
from it. It's like from the Bible.
Oh, it's good.
He works with the Bible code. Not the Bible code book so much, but a code that he deciphered that found that everything works within in certain patterns, in numerical patterns.
Everything has a rhythm.
Events. Yeah,
history has a rhythm. Yeah. Everything has a rhythm.
And he really documents the history pretty well. The book is pretty
I think you're going to really find it fascinating. And
I hope so.
I know I did.
Enjoy
the show.
That. Yeah, and we start with a few of articles from that we had. And I think you'll find that interesting, too. So here we go. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the LA Steel Show. And I'm Leo, and Lila is right here with me.
Good evening, folks. It's nice to be here tonight. Feels like summer again, though.
Yeah, it's about 70 degrees out there.
So it was today, huh?
It's pretty warm tonight, too. Anyway, we got a show for you tonight. We got what do we got? Oh yeah, we got.
Did you forget already?
I got to bring this up. At 8:30, we got a special guest tonight is a gentleman named Tom Payne, and
not the Tom Payne.
And Tom wrote a book called
The Template of Time.
Yep, The Template of Time.
Our Destiny Decoded.
And he's been working this out. He figured out how to. I'll talk about it later, but it's about the...
Mathematics and patterns of math in the Bible.
Yeah, biblical mathematical codes that certain events happen every 70 years or 500 years. And it kind of gets into a lot of... I'm not sure really how to... I'll let him explain it because I'm not really...
comfortable with math so much, so
all. The math is simple. I'm just not comfortable with the premise, and after reviewing the book, I realized more and more. I mean, it's so easily conceivable to that the whole Bible is a myth. You know what I mean?
You have to kind of take it on face value. This is
well, it's a coded myth.
This is the code that he found on in
right.
it and
but
how
you know,
the patent works, and he can
know,
also
I,
make
I,
prophecies
I,
based
I,
on
I,
it.
I,
let
I,
him explain
I,
it.
I, yeah.
Well, that's your, you know,
well, I read the
you
thing
didn't really
I
read
I,
the whole thing.
I read the whole book, and I was like, really like, okay. But, you know, the questions I have to bring up to him are, number one is, you know, the fact that these codes do exist in there make it more and more prevalent to me, or more and more credible to me, that the Masons who actually did interpreted the King James Bible was, you know, by Francis Bacon.
Maybe they put the codes in.
Yeah, these codes are all, you know, symbols and all these things that are, you know, if they screwed around with the real text, you know, and kind of put things in and, you know, mess things up. But now that you got a billion people wandering around thinking that Christianity is a real religion, you know, it's a real reality that Christ is divine and everything happened in 2 years, 50 years, and 500 years, and, you know, whatever. So, you know, my question is, why did they crucify everybody for 300 years? You know what I mean? There's so many bizarre and I mean, if you look into these things, you can manipulate it any way you want to. You know what I mean? But that's what we'll talk to Tom. It's a fascinating theory and worth the read.
It was interesting. I thought.
Yeah, it was interesting. Interesting. So anyway. And at 9:05 we got Woody in the ring, and at 9:40
mm-hmm.
we'll have John Brennan on tonight, who'll be joining us here for about 20 minutes or so toward the end of the show. So we want to thank everybody for everybody ahead for staying with us tonight through the whole show, and let's see. We've got a couple of really interesting articles here that we want to bring up. I don't know, Flyley, if you want to start with one.
Well, I'd also like you to see...
We're going to get to that.
...where our
we're going to get to that.
Sponsor is
we'll
in the scheme of things.
It's
but I have rather a long article,
universe.
And this is by Gordon Duff. Garan, call to attack Americans comes from Israel. Al-Qaeda spokesman Adam Garan works for the Israeli government. End of story. Israeli terrorist clones are responsible for most hardline rhetoric threats, and if we investigate it closely, have actually recruited terrorists and directly inspired, if not planned and executed, attacks on America. Gadan is part of it. So is WikiLeaks. And Gordon Duff, who writes this, is a staff writer, senior editor. This is from veteranstoday.com. A call to arms demanding Muslims in America and elsewhere begin terror campaigns was spread around the world. The message, we are told, was found on a secret website by an Israeli company who put it in a press release. There is no evidence any American Muslim has ever been on the website referred to. No American intelligence agency could find it, not the CIA or the FBI or Homeland Security. There was only one way the 3,300,000 Muslims of Detroit could hear call to terrorism from an Israeli company that passes on such messages for profit. Does it create them too? You be the judge. Look at a possible analogy. If you were to capture a vicious rabid dog in the wilderness and turned it loose in a children's playground, would you be a terrorist? This is essentially what is being admitted to. What is in question, another analogy, is whether you purposely infected the dog with rabies in the first place. Either way, you are a terrorist. Adam Garan, the American Taliban, the lisping, overweight bungalow continually calling for the murder of America, is really named Adam Perlman from a family highly influential in the Anti-Defamation League. The group distributing his threats, site intelligence, contracted to the American government, is run by the former IDF member whose father was executed in Iraq as a Mossad terrorist. Site intelligence is the source of the Osama bin Laden tapes, long proven to be not only the wrong voice, but to resemble bin Laden so little as to have become a joke. Gadon came on the scene when tapes of Osama bin Laden credit for 9/11 failed forensic examination. They were counterfeits. The CIA's own version had been Laden denying any involvement in in the event. That was late 2001, and America hadn't been told the story about Tora Bora, that many stories about Tora Bora warlords covering for bin Laden. American troops being pulled back at the last minute by presidential order or the Delta Force being betrayed were all lies. Osama bin Laden, already dying from kidney failure, was murdered by one of his own men on December 14, 2001. Pakistan's ISI had informants there, was leaked to the newspapers, and was widely reported. Premier Benazir Bhutto even announced it in an interview with BBC's David Frost. With 9/11 denial on the books and bin Laden dead, there would be no invasion of Iraq, no new leader was in place to bring out for the American people, no new boogeyman. The very real conspiracy covering up of the truth about 9/11, the treasonous intelligence doctoring leading to the disaster in Iraq and the up-and-coming years of building a drug empire in Afghanistan, stealing billions in oil from Iraq, the thinly disguised martial law decrees in America, and the planned attack on Iran was threatened unless somehow Osama bin Laden could be brought back to life. Nearly a decade later, Pakistan's intelligence chief, General Pasha, does everything but scream it from the rooftops when he carefully hints to a dull-witted ABC interviewer that bin Laden is dead. Journalist Anand Debargav of UPI and the Washington Times fame makes it clear as possible when he says bin Laden is as dead as Elvis. Even CI Director Leon Panetta confirms that there is no evidence of bin Laden since late 2001. With bin Laden dead, it all falls apart. Al-Qaeda, 9/11, and the continual accusations made against Pakistan. Still we hear it. Bin Laden touring Afghanistan, or with last week's reports, living in luxury in Iran. Not only is bin Laden dead, but when he was alive, the BBC confirmed that he had absolutely no terrorist organization of any kind, masterminded no plots, controlled no organization, and had no more involvement on the world stage other than at one time helping the CIA raise money to fund refugee organizations during the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan. Contrary to what has been reported, bin Laden never raised money for weapons. That task was left to Gulbuddin Hikmatyar, the CIA paymaster who received $800 million in U.S. funds. Today, we are told Hikmatyar may be in Iran. However, we have verified that he is actually in Pakistan, working directly with the CIA as a go-between with the Taliban, taking an active role in the current talks with the Karzai government. Few in Afghanistan trust him, long a favorite with the CIA and Pakistan hardliners. If anything, the myth of Osama bin Laden is actually Hikmatyar. What is said bin Laden did in Afghanistan was him, CIA money man and terrorist. Problem is, he still is a CIA money man and terrorist, flying American planes, going on and off American bases, but listed with the Department of Homeland Security as one of the most wanted terrorists in the world. The truth, Hikmatyar is seen by the U.S. as their deal maker in Afghanistan, something many in Afghanistan find both frightening and delusional. Perhaps one of the most frightening issues of our war on terror, or more appropriately, the phony war on terror, has been use of the terrorist clones like Adam Perlman, the Israeli actor playing a Taliban leader, on videos distributed by Israeli intelligence. The real insanity is that the videos are produced just to fool Americans into rebuilding the coalition of Islamophobics and paranoids typified by the subscribers of FamilySecurityMatters.org. You should see that website. things aren't that innocent. Much of the message is going to the Islamic community worldwide and is reaching people who are angry and looking for someone to blame. Those finding Adam Gadan, those magically finding his mysterious broadcasts, and those distributing them to the world are giving material support to terrorism. They are, in fact, terrorists. The message they, our friends, you know exactly what I mean, is spreading is clear. Attack and kill Americans, not just in Iraq and Afghanistan, but anywhere you can find them in the world. They are the real enemy, not Israel. Does anyone wonder why Gadan never calls for the attack on Israel? In fact, Al-Qaeda doesn't seem to know Israel exists. They've never threatened it. They've never attacked it. They've never even mentioned it. All those Osama bin Laden and Adam Perlman, sorry, Adam Gadan, have one thing in common. Israel doesn't exist. Get the picture? Here is what Perlman, let's be straight about it, his name is Perlman, and his family is Zionist and very active in the ADL. That is where he is, or they are advocating in this statement released yesterday. This is what they said. Immigrant communities like those which live on the margin of society in miserable suburbs of Paris, London, and Detroit, or from those arriving in America or Europe to study in its universities or seek the daily bread in the streets of its cities, you have an opportunity to strike the leaders of unbelief and retaliate against them on their own soil, as long as there is no covenant between you and them. Clear and simple, we are hearing what Israel is telling the world, the Muslim world, is the voice of Al-Qaeda. What is Israel, or rather Al-Qaeda, telling us? Please attack Britain, France, and the United States. Detroit has a Muslim population of 300,000, yet the one terrorist attack that was done by a mentally incompetent Nigerian national, do you remember the crotch bomber? Do you wonder why the story disappeared from the news so quickly? When two Detroit attorneys caught Air Force officials putting the terrorists on a plane, airport officials working for the Israeli camp, things fell apart. When veterans today discovered from intelligence sources in both Nigeria and Ghana that the boy's family was not only tied directly to the CIA, but the father was a business partner in an Israeli defense firm, it came further apart. When this came out, a news blackout fell and the story died. When the government of Yemen found laptop computers belonging to Al-Qaeda that showed a clear record of daily contacts with handlers in Israel, that story totally died. The Detroit bombing told us two things. The vast majority of American Muslims are Americans and have no loyalty to religious extremists or any other country. That is the other guys. American Muslims are mostly not only Republicans, but politically active in the party and very conservative. Terrorists can't move around the world without help, either visas, real or phony, passports, or security walks. Let me just skip a little bit to this next part. Let's see. I wanted to skip this next part, too. Let me go to the conclusion, because this kind of goes on a little bit too long. Let's see. The Perlman WikiLeaks is a non-event. For years, Perlman, masquerading as spokesman for Al-Qaeda, has put out childish videos all the time to help certain political races influence arms sales to Israel, or as with yesterday's tweet, to reinforce WikiLeaks fiasco, another attempt to con America. Last time, WikiLeaks tried to get the U.S. to cut all aid to Pakistan, an act which would have made the war in Afghanistan even worse than it is now, if that's possible. This one is time to a WikiLeaks custom crafted to blame the world's ills on Iran and target number one for Israel. As a threefer, the New York Times and MSNBC went after Iran for secretly buying off President Karzai of Afghanistan. We knew Karzai was aligned with India and Israel against Pakistan. Now it is owned by Iran. How many sides can one person be on? So that article kind of goes on a little bit, but
it's a credible source.
The major point is that nothing is truly ever as it seems, so you have to look a little deeper and see what's really going on behind the scenes.
You know, I got to tell you, if you can pick up this book, go to Knowledge House Publishers. It's called Wrongly Blamed. And that tells you that the collusion, that tells you the entire Israeli Mossad
involvement
in all of the terrorist movements and all the terrorist crap that's gone on in the last, 60 years, okay, since the inception since 1948.
Since the state was formed.
Yeah. So, you know, it's founded on terrorism, you know, by the Israelis. So if you check it out, go to Wrongly Blame. We got a guy coming up in a couple of weeks. By the way, next week we'll be preempted, I believe, by the
election.
Yeah.
So usually we are. So I presume it's going to be.
I haven't heard, but I would assume that.
That would be our best guess.
But on the following week, we're hoping to have a guy named Muhammad Alam, who. Or Shahid Alam, who is a professor, and he wrote an interesting book called Israeli Exceptionalism, and it talks about how the Israelis had to create this Zionist mythology in order to
keep that state alive.
To keep it alive. So you know. And if you want to hear something, here's a little note. Shimon Peres, Israel's former president, or Israel's president rather, Shimon Peres, acknowledged that Israel's existence depends on its friendship with the United States. Says Israel needs the U.S. for its existence. We cannot exist alone. For our existence, we need the friendship of the United States of America. It doesn't sound easy, but this is the truth, he said. In a speech to Jewish leaders on Thursday evening, broadcast by Israel Army Radio, Peres urged the Israelis to try to meet U.S. demands in order to be assured of their existence. As the United States is trying to understand the security needs of Israel, we Israelis, however, ourselves must understand the security needs of the United States, said Peres. He made the remarks after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu rejected Washington's call to extend a partial 10-month moratorium on the settlement activities, which expired last month. The expiry of the freeze led to the halt of direct talks between Netanyahu and acting Palestinian Authority Chief Mahmoud Abbas, and the talks were relaunched in Washington on September 2nd. The U.S. President Barack Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton have both repeatedly called on Tel Aviv to extend the freeze to keep the continuation of the negotiations. But, it's an absurd situation. And without the United States, they'd be toast. You know, so then they realize that. So, United States, wake the hell up, will you? There's another interesting thing that came up. I wanted to read this. American people to Democrats and to GOP, get out of office. You don't speak for us. This is by Paul Watson. Or Steve Watson. A whopping majority of 62% of the American people believe it will be a good thing for the country if most all incumbents from both parties were removed in the upcoming midterm election. That is the finding of new national poll that also reveals over a third would like to see a new political party formed to remove the establishment. Only 27% said that they felt their representative in Congress was the best person for the office. Furthermore, 43% of the American people do not believe that either party in Congress represents them or their country. The number rises to a majority of 53% amongst mainstream voters only. The survey conducted by Rasmussen highlights just how utterly sick of the phony Punch and Judy political paradigm a plurality of the public has become. They asked, is it fair to say that neither party in Congress is the party of the American people? Only 35% of respondents disagreed, with a further 22% saying they were unsure. When asked if they agreed with the statement, Republicans and Democrats are so much alike that an entirely new party is needed to represent the American people, 38% responded in the affirmative. And the same amount also believed that there is a distinct responsibility or possibility that a third-party candidate will be elected to the White House within the next decade. The same study also found that 29% of likely voters see themselves or someone they are close to as a Tea Party member. The disparity between that figure and the 38% who would like to see a new third party may represent the feeling among some that the Tea Party has been co-opted by this GOP establishment and the conservative-leaning corporate media. Last week, a key figure in the evolution of the Tea Party movement, Carl Dinninger, highlighted this backlash by penning a piece titled "To the Tea Party, Go Screw Yourself." Dinninger, who used his website to promote one of the first major national Tea Party events, specifically hit out at Sarah Palin, Newt Gingrich, and Bob Barr, and warned that the movement has been severely watered down and brought into line with mainstream establishment GOP efforts. So, you know, that's what's happening. You know, Tea Party might have been legitimate, but, you know, it quickly got corrupted. And you brought in a bunch of bozos like Palin and Gingrich. And, I mean, who in the hell in their right mind would even consider voting for a degenerate, you know, creep, you know, cretin like Newt Gingrich or a Looney Tune like Sarah Palin? It just doesn't even make any sense. Or some, you know, dim-witted bass player, you know, Huckabee, you know? I mean, holy cow. You know, it's just amazing to me. Yes, Lila, I know.
We'll put it on.
All right, but anyway, just, you know, this just totally amazes me, you know, that anybody could possibly, you know, think that way. You know, it's just sickening, just absolutely sickening. That's why, you know, 63% of the country, I'm grateful to see that 63% of the country, you know, want a new government. Don't you think?
Yeah.
You know. Okay, I'm going to go away forever, and we'll be right back. Proud to serve you. They keep our streets and parks clean.
They make our schools a great place to learn.
They keep violent felons out of our community.
They even help our children get to school safe and on time.
They are the 35,000 public service employees represented by Council 4.
These employees are dedicated and efficient.
They are accountable to Connecticut taxpayers. That means they don't work for privatized agencies that may hire substandard, non-union workers.
Companies like these are constantly in the headlines with their corruption scandals, which cost taxpayers millions.
That's why it's important to keep public services in public hands with people who work hard around Connecticut and around the clock.
On the state and the local level.
Public service employees are proud to serve you every single day.
Find out more at council4.org. Council 4, AFSCME, a union for all. This ad is brought to you by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. This union is affiliated with the AFL-CIO.
Okay, we're back, and kind of sticking to the area of the world that I was talking about. Before, from Press TV, this is kind of sad, 14 million Pakistanis in dire need of aid. Nearly 14 million Pakistanis are still in need of urgent humanitarian aid months after the devastating floods hit their country, killing hundreds of people. More than 7 million are still without shelter in Pakistan, as waterborne diseases and nutrition are still a grave concern for millions of the country's flood victims after the July-August flooding. This is while the United Nations has launched several appeals to fund aid aimed at helping the victims of the world's worst national disaster in Pakistan's history. According to the report, millions of Pakistani flood victims are leading miserable lives in several districts in the southern Sindhar province. Some 2,000 people have lost their lives, and 20 million others have been affected by the weeks-long floods that engulfed large regions of the southern Asian country. Winter, cold, and hunger are also threats looming over millions of people still without basic necessities. You know, a few weeks go by and we forget all about the things and the disasters that have happened to people. And I believe Leo is getting our guest on the phone. And just to let you know, Tom Payne is a retired international sales and marketing executive. He credits his training as an airborne and ranger qualified infantry officer in the U.S. Army for the discipline and endurance he needed in his research. A devout Christian, his global travels, love of history and faith were also central to the development of the Template of Time. And you can find out more information on this book at thetemplateoftime.com. And it's available for purchase from barnesandnoble.com and iUniverse. And we're pleased to have you on the show, Tom. Welcome to the L.A. Steel Show.
Thank you for having me. I'm pleased to be here.
Tom, I was curious, is it also available? Is it available on Amazon?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay, yeah, because, yeah, all right. So,
We were wondering what inspired you to write this book. It's a bit complicated. What was your inspiration for it?
It's kind of crazy. I was reading an article on the stock market and how it follows 70-year cycles, and I thought, well, then, I wonder if there are 70-year cycles in the Bible. And don't know why the thought came into my head, so I checked, and I found out that there were all sorts of time cycles and patterns of time. And I just wondered, why are they there? And I started playing with them, relating them to history. And over a long period of time, a model of time developed, and history fitted perfectly.
So since you were able to develop this model, is this model also a predictor of events in time?
You know, it's kind of like if you have patterns of behavior or patterns of the weather.
Mm-hmm.
They point to future behavioral events or future weather-related events, like the forecast for the next day's weather. And this does, too, because it's a very structured pattern and it's very consistent. And there are a lot of things that it's forecasting to occur around this year of 2010.
Can you talk a little bit about what is forecast in 2010?
Yeah, first of all, it's a 36-year sequence, and it starts on certain dates that are based on the time cycles that are extended from 6 BC, the birth year of Jesus, according to some scholars. So if you go to 1974, it's a very important date in the template. And a lot of important processes occurred there, or historical events occurred. One was the Yom Kippur War.
Mm-hmm.
It happened in 1973, so just within a year of that cycle date. Now, based on the template, you would expect, since Israel was invaded by Syria and Egypt in 1973, you would expect for this conflict to be redirected in some way about 32 years later, sometime around 2006. And we find in 2007... Israel invaded Syria's airspace and is widely believed to have taken out their nuclear facilities. Mm-hmm. Of course, Syria claims they were never building such a thing. Now, what this then points to is the final stage of the sequence. About 4 years later, around 2010, 2011, you will have another event occur that is the culmination of the sequence. So this bombing of Assyrian airspace is just the small start of something that culminates in something larger. And what the template suggests is that Israel will also take out or try to take out the Iranian nuclear facilities. 2010, 2011 is my best guess. At the same time, they will have to engage Hezbollah in southern Lebanon because they're just stocked to the gills with rockets and are waiting to use them. So more than likely, they would invade southern Lebanon to take out this Iranian-Syrian proxy army.
Well, they already tried that, and they destroyed the infrastructure in 2006, and it was
another exactly, which is another type of.
But you know, don't you see? I mean, to me, all of this stuff was really basically Israeli aggression. I mean, and you know, I going through the whole book, I just seem to see.
I don't know. There was nothing. You even mentioned it in the book that there was really no way to there was no pattern for Israeli for as far as the Israeli to predict the Israeli or Jewish future. All right, because it was so erratic.
I don't know that I said that in the book. No.
Yeah, I believe you did, but that particular thing, your prediction seemed to be more on a Christian, level, on a Christian.
Following
the New Testament. Yeah.
The predictions.
Well, one of the things, and I'm not commenting on the rightness of Israel doing these things, or I'm just suggesting that this is what
these things happen. Yeah, but you did mention that it was very difficult to pattern the Jewish. Near future, or whatever pattern. All right, but because they had split up,
I know what you're talking about.
They had split up for 1,000 years, so it's like you didn't have any.
For about 1,000 years of history, there's very little recorded about the Jewish people because they were nearly wiped out by Rome in mm-hmm. 130 by around 135 A.D. in the Second Jewish-Roman War, and they were so close to being extinguished. I mean, wiped off the face of the earth that there's almost no history of the period between 135 A.D. and about 1150 A.D.
Oh.
So on the template, they don't fit because in the sense that there's nothing, there's very little.
There's nothing there, yeah. I see. All right. Now, getting into, you had 500-year and 70-year, it seemed, and intervals. But you were saying that every 70 years there was a financial there seemed to be a financial chaos or a financial crisis of some sort.
That's what the article I read said.
Yeah.
I haven't found that to be the case, but that was what this other author had written.
But you had 70 years was a significant time frame in your quote, equations, right?
Very significant because it's based on you have these little time patterns in the Bible. You have Pentecost, which is 7 times 7 plus 1 day. Then you have Jubilee, which is 7 times 7 plus 1 year. And all I did was I just expanded the scale of Jubilee, and it became 7 70-year patterns plus 10 years. So it's central to the model, yes.
So I don't know where can you go with this? I mean, that was another question I had. As far as you actually made some serious money with this formula.
Yeah. I noticed that there were some movements in the stock market that seemed to resemble this structure of time, and I started to invest in options, and it was quite profitable. It's been quite profitable.
Now, is this
continuing
based?
So?
So far, so good.
Oh, good for you.
Now, is this based on what, a 70-year cycle, or how are you predicting the shorts?
Well, that's something that I'm not going to go into great detail other than the fact that there is a structure to time, and it's outlined in the book,
mm-hmm.
and I just noticed that this structure resembled price movements in the stock market, so the chart.
Yeah, a lot of
it,
yeah.
So this structure is not just a biblical structure. It's a structure that can be applied to all time as well.
I would think so because, if you look at history, it's the
mm-hmm.
ultimate chaotic system. There are
mm.
billions and billions of variables. If you look at the weather, it's a chaotic system. Meaning that it doesn't move in a straight line. And this pattern seems to superimpose some order on that most chaotic system of all, which is human history.
Yeah.
So the stock market's another chaotic system. And if there's a likeness or resemblance between the two, that's not surprising to me.
Well, the Bible Code, the book that came out a number of years ago, they were showing how certain things predicted, the rise of Hitler or the significant periods in history. Does yours do that yet? Your template seems to mark these throughout the book. You mark these significant events like the Reformation and then the French Revolution and the American Revolution and, you know, all of these different things that seem to fall within your time frame, within your template, rather. You had mentioned in the book, like, 2024 was more or less the time frame that you predicted another catastrophic event. But, you know, we're now merging, getting very close to 2012. And in the Mayan calendar, okay, which is the astrological, you know, Mayan prophecy, you know, all of this is supposed to, the world is supposed to go through a drastic change in, you know, actually in October 28, 2011, is when we're supposed to see this major transformation or major global change. Could be a polar shift or could be a number of things. Do you see anything like that do you see any major significant historical or seismic or cataclysmic event that could possibly, you know, be triggered within the next, by 2012, in your charts or within your calculations?
Well, I have a chapter entitled 2010 because so many important historical processes mm-hmm. converge on that date, and I have a lot of attention is paid to Afghanistan and mm-hmm. to Pakistan Iran and Iraq, and those three countries, or those particularly Iran, Iraq, and Afghanistan, all had a very, very important event occur in 1979, which 32 years later, which would take you to 2011.
Mm-hmm.
That important event, for example, was Saddam Hussein came into power in 79,
yep.
Ayatollah Khomeini came into power in 79, mm-hmm. and the Russians invaded Afghanistan. And so in the book, I go into where I think these sequences will lead with respect to those three nations. One of the events that I predicted, and there seems to be coming true already, the book was published before a lot of this information came out, and it came out fairly recently, but I said that I think that this points to the United States leaving Afghanistan by 2014, if not sooner, and now we're hearing that that is the date that the English are targeting and that the Americans are targeting as
mm-hmm.
well. Whether or not it happens, that time will tell.
I think the prediction that interested me very much was the prediction of the Sino-American duopoly.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite a teaser, actually.
Now, what I think a lot of people are afraid of China, and they're certainly a big competitor of ours, and we need
yep.
to take them very seriously because a very powerful country that's becoming more powerful by the day. But I don't see them as being a threat to the United States, and the way that things are unfolding on the template is our cooperation will become even greater. I'm thinking right now, I think one of the predictions I made on the website, at least, if not in the book, was around this year of 2010, we should see some sort of economic breakthrough between the United States and China, probably related to currency, the big issue, but there's
mm-hmm.
going to be something positive in that regard. And I think you're going to see also some things occurring with Taiwan and China that will lead towards them becoming part of Taiwan becoming part of China. And some breakthroughs in that area have already occurred. In 2010, they just signed a big new economic agreement between the two countries, and economic integration precedes political integration. So
mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see some movement in that area as well.
That should be very interesting, because I can't see that Europe would be too happy about that.
No. And one of the things, one of the biggest subjects of the book, of course, is Europe
mm-hmm.
and how it's going to develop into a centralized super state with military ambitions. Right now it looks like such a clumsy, bumbling mess.
It sure does.
But it doesn't take long for Europe to become extraordinarily powerful, militarily speaking, when it wants to. And I use the example of Adolf Hitler. He took over Germany in 1933, and by 1939, they became a continent-straddling superpower.
Mm.
But when he took over in 1933, they had a very weak army. It happened that quickly.
Well, I can see that all happening. The only question I really pose to you on this European Union and is the threat of the New World Order. You know, that may happen, but you talk about the rise of the beast there, but and you mentioned a number of things as we go into the 666 period through the, you know, that where we are entering that period now. In your calculations, I believe it was brought forward to the 224 era period.
Yeah, here's an interesting thing. 666 is, of course, the number of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Bible, it was mentioned, it was two things. It's the number of his name is associated with this, but also it's the number of man. One of the things that I looked at was moving this 111 year time cycle out. And it tracks remarkably well with the movements in the Roman Empire, which, according to Daniel, there was going to be this fourth kingdom that followed Greece, and it was the Roman Empire, and it was going to be in existence until the end of time. Then the great beast of Revelation took this theme over. I mean, both of them have, for example, a beast with 10 heads and 10 crowns. You find that in Daniel, you find that in Revelation. And so what I did was I just tracked the Roman Empire to see where these changes took place. And, for example, changes in leadership, when someone was anointed with power. And that usually happened on the new direction phase of these 111-year cycles. Well, 666 is six 111-year cycles. If you multiply it times three, or its third iteration, it's 1,998 years. If you move that from 6 BC, you come to 1992, which is the year of the founding of the European Union. One of the things that I'm thinking would be likely to occur, based on past history, is that when the new direction phase comes around 32 years later, or 2024, it would be a likely time of seeing the leader of this European Union emerge. So if there is going to be a time when we see who this leader is going to be, I would say 2024 is a good choice.
So do you see anything? Do you see any kind of? I noticed there was a gap there. There was no sign or no sign, no real pattern for the 2012. Nothing seemed to be occurring in the 2012 year.
Well, one of the things that you look at with this model is it's typically operating with a standard deviation of 1 to 2 years.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So 2012 is very close to the 2010 cycle date.
Oh, okay.
And things that occur or that are supposed to occur in 2010 may drift into 2012. So it could be a very, very powerful date based on the template's diagnosis as well.
Right. Well,
so are you going to take this model and extend it further out, do you think, in
one
time?
One of the things that I'm looking at doing is, since I just wanted to get the model out there, particularly I was trying to get it out before the year 2010 passed, because I didn't want everything to happen, and then I publish the book and everybody says, oh, yeah, you published it all right, but it's already happened.
Right.
One of the things I'd like to do is focus more on the last 250 years, because if you get more granular with this, you can get you can come to some, I think, more specific conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you think would in the next let's say in the next couple of years? Okay, you mentioned that cooperation with China, but everything looks like China is actually backing away from the currency. You know, all of these countries want to. We're at loggerhead with everybody right now. It doesn't seem to be any cooperation going on. If anything, it looks like most of the countries around the world want to abandon the dollar bill and let it sink. And now with the recent news by the mighty Ben Bernanke, he's going to print more money and deflate the dollar further. So I don't know if anything, I see us leading into an economic collapse here in the next year or so. All right.
Do you see that at all?
Several major predictors, financial predictors, have predicted another extreme collapse this year, before the end of this year.
I don't
year.
Know if it's going to be this year, but I do think that there's going to be a double dip recession for this reason. 1973, when you had the Arab oil embargo, the United States economy tanked. Well, that comes to a culmination in the year 2010. So that's this 1974 sequence that culminates in 2010. Another sequence began around 1978. In 1980, we had another horrific recession that extended into 81 and 82, which drove the Fed funds rate up to near 20%, and we had double-digit unemployment and all this other stuff. And the 1978 sequence will have a new direction 32 years later, around 2010. So you have both of these recessionary movements that are converging on the year 2010. And I think that that will probably indicate that we're going to have a recession again, another one, probably around 2011 is my guess. And I would think that it would be related to a cut in the oil supply. Because if you think about it, if Israel does attack Iran. Iran has promised that they're going to shut the Straits of Hormuz, and we don't know what that means or what that would entail. But even if it's temporary, it would cause a severe shock to world economies.
Actually, and we've had several people on recently this year who've stated that we have, just in the Gulf of Mexico, we have the largest oil reserves in the world, and between that and Alaska, and one of the reasons that this Gulf oil spill, was an issue, happened was because they needed to suspend the oil production in that area for at least 6 to 8 months to get the prices of oil up, and cause this artificial
shortage. Mm-hmm.
And that makes a lot of sense. A lot of evidence to point to that as well. But they had. But the thing that we're looking at, even if they did cut off the Straits of Hormuz, the Suez Canal, or wherever the Iranian passageway, it really, really wouldn't make that big a difference to the oil supply. I mean, we've got so much of it that we'll never run out. And
we don't want to use
it. All it would do is.
I hope you're right on that.
Well, that's all the predictions. All the experts have said so, and there's plenty of access to oil from all over the world, Venezuela, our own Gulf, and Alaska. I mean, all of these places. So there's more than enough.
But it doesn't mean it can't be artificially manipulated.
It can be artificially manipulated. It is artificially manipulated, but it's not. We'd never really run out of we'll never really ever run out of oil. There's just so much of it, and they're finding it all.
During the Arab oil embargo, we didn't run out. It just caused the oil price to spike higher, which then raised up so many other prices.
But they found that I remember because I lived through that period and was stuck in those oil and those
long lines.
Those lines, but at that they actually indicted the oil company, the federal government. Actually had indictments out on these oil companies for price fixing, all right, and that was an artificial that whole OPEC thing was just to boom up the prices of oil.
See what happens again?
And everybody was thrilled that it happened. I mean, not the people, but the companies were because they made all kinds of money. Yeah, and all the oil wells that they were drilling or all the oil that they were capped. All the wells they had capped, they now went to they were now getting all kinds of money for drilling into that oil.
So do you think that could happen again, huh?
I think it's a possibility. But one thing I'd also like to touch base back on was the China.
Yeah.
China has reasons why they might want to broker some sort of deal, and who will know what's going on behind the scenes? But Taiwan is sticking in their craw. They want that badly, and the U.S. has a treaty with Taiwan that's supposed to provide them with military assistance and things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows what sort of deal could be brokered to get that out of the way, because I do think Taiwan by the year 2030 will be a part of China.
Yeah.
Well, You know, maybe we will do something to facilitate that.
It would almost have to take place with us doing something to facilitate it
because
our Navy is there.
Yep.
Our Navy is very big and strong, and, you know, Taiwan is moving towards China.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. That never was the case until just several years ago.
Hmm.
Why is that, do you think?
I think economically they kind of have to.
Well, that and, you know, there's just these strange things in history where you have this movement that goes in one direction, and then all of a sudden it moves in a totally new direction.
Wow.
It's like there's this transformation point that then 4 years later culminates in something that nobody ever would have expected.
I feel like the way you're discussing things, I feel like it's almost like there's been a symphony written, and all these movements are happening, and then they're repeated, and it's just so interesting. I'm not a mathematical person at all, but I find your whole book very, very interesting to me.
Thank you. You know, but the math is pretty easy because I'm an English major. So
you are.
I couldn't do any deep math. It's pretty much addition, subtraction, multiplication, division.
But the fact that you saw the pattern.
What do you see for the United States? You know, because I know you had predicted, you had the 1774 was a significant year, and you carried that into now. But what do you see in your patterns for the United States?
Yeah, this is an interesting thing that happens on this template. You've got the second stage, mm-hmm. which, you know, would start, let's say, in 774 AD, then 500 years later in 1274, then 500 years later in 1774. And during this second stage, you oftentimes have a dominant power and a power that is oppressed. In the time of Charlemagne, it was a dominant power in 774 AD, and the Saxons were oppressed. And then when you get to the third stage, which is what we're now in, the Carolingian dynasty completely vanished, and the Saxon dynasty became the ruling force in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You see that also with the United States. It was a small, oppressed power. It was oppressed by the Brits, by the British. And now in this third stage of culmination, you see the United States rising to dominance, and the British are essentially, they've been called our poodle by some commentators. I mean, they follow us. They don't call the tune anymore. So another thing you'll see with this rise to dominance in the third stage, it typically doesn't end at the conclusion of the third stage. It goes on for several more decades at a minimum. So I don't see the United States rise to dominance being curtailed. I think that it will remain a dominant power in this hemisphere.
So when do you think the advent of the Antichrist will come up, since you're dealing with the Bible and the codes and the revelations? And when do you think that the Antichrist will rise, or has he already come?
No, I think that I don't know, of course, but the date that I gave as a possible date would be 2024. We will see this individual who will be a brilliant, charismatic, tremendously successful military leader coming onto the stage of things, and this individual will probably want to expand southward into Africa and into the Middle East as well. Another thing that's predicted by the book is that a third time's a charm. You had Napoleon try to conquer the Russian people.
Yeah.
You had Hitler try, leading another large army of largely Germans, but it was an international army, failed. And I think that one of the areas where this conqueror will want to go is into Russia, and it's for resources, which is what Europe lacks, and south for resources as well. Things that point in that direction are things that happen in the second stage, where Napoleon took place, oftentimes are small directions that then come to fruition in the third stage. So in the second stage, Napoleon invaded Egypt, and one of the prophecies of Daniel is that this Antichrist figure will conquer Egypt. Another thing that Napoleon did, but not in a small way, in a huge way, he invaded Russia, and that failed. Oftentimes things that start and fail in the second stage come to fruition and success in the third. So that is something that I think could very well occur.
So who do you think would who would invade Russia?
Would be the European Union, the entire European Union acting under one centralized command.
Huh. Boy, that require a large transformation in Europe, wouldn't it?
Right now, the European Union came into existence, which is a very loose, decentralized confederacy of nations. So yes, it would require significant transformation where you have the government becoming more and more centralized, and then somebody who's able to rise up and take over. And you know, the way that that could occur, who knows, but usually those things happen when there are crisis situations, and they rush to a dictator. I mean, it happened with Rome on several occasions. They loved their republican form of government, but occasionally they would appoint a dictator during times of crisis.
Because right now I see the European Union is kind of run by all these sort of office kind of people, bureaucrats.
Yeah, they're nothing.
They
have no power, really.
Right. And they're not even elected.
Power is with the states.
Yeah.
So that slow movement over time will not be that slow based on these projections.
That's very interesting.
Now, you talked about briefly about Obama in your book, and what is the significance of that, okay, of Obama's election in your template? He brought about, you had mentioned something about the fact that, for 500 years, I guess it was a slave, it was the end of a slavery, or an end of that of that black oppression, culminating in the president of the United States. Is that it? But that kind of led into your template as well.
Yeah, people who were oppressed in the second stage as, you know, slaves, African Americans were definitely oppressed during the 1774-1830 time period. They tend to rise to dominance in the third stage, it's not that they throw off the shackles of oppression and gain strength, and that certainly has happened with the African American people when they have now elected a president of the United States. Another group that I point to is the Mormon people. In 1830, which is a very important date in the template, their religion was founded. Joseph Smith had received the Book of Mormon, and I think that's the birth year of the Mormon Church. Well, they were a discredited cult back then, with little to no power, being chased from pillar to post. Now we see them with having gained much respectability, and particularly in the business world and in the political world. And I mentioned that it would not be surprising at all to see either a Mitt Romney or some other Mormon also entering the presidential ranks.
That's interesting.
Well, you have some very interesting things to say, and I really enjoyed listening to you and reading your book, The Template of Time, Our Destiny Decoded. And I urge people to get it. They can get it on iUniverse, and they can get it on Amazon. And I think it's really worth a read, and they'll learn some very interesting things. And we'll all be anxious to see if your predictions come true, Tom.
Me too.
And good luck with the stock market.
I hope that may as well for you, too.
And thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And have a good evening.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Good night. That was Tom Paine talking to us about The Template of Time, Our Destiny Decoded. It was a very interesting book. And some interesting things to say, interesting point of view. So we're right at the top of the hour. You have station ID?
Yeah. Okay. I hope you enjoyed that. That's that was Tom Paine, the author of The Template of Time. And you can check out his website on thetemplateoftime.com. And I want to thank everybody. In case you didn't know, that was the first hour of last night's program, rather, Tuesday the 27th, on our WQQQ.com show, WQQQ 103.3 FM, commercial station. And you can join us every Tuesday night there on WQQQ.com between 8 and 10 o'clock. And so I want to thank everybody for joining us. I hope you listened, hope you enjoyed the show. And we'll talk to you tomorrow when we enter the spiritual realm. So good night.